Charles, good to see you. That's 1976, Red Cross, okay. Spirit of 76 from the movie. David Cassidy is one of the stars in it.
Uh-huh.
And talk about those boots you were wearing. Those are the boots that you wore when you went on tour, right? Those platforms?
Yeah, along the same, I said, in the same spirit, at least, as Massacre at Park Bench. During the last tour that I was doing live, I did an encore, which we came out and playing stadiums, you know, I needed to do something really big as an encore. So we started doing, I think it was a medley of C.C. Ryder, one of those Mitch Ryder things, you know.
Ginny,
and all that. I put a couple of other things in there. Right before it, we went to a complete blackout, and they were electric, those boots, and they were rhinestones, and they're really a send-up.
Mm-hmm.
Of Elton and Kiss and all of those mid-70s bands that were doing that rhinestone flash thing. Something that I wasn't really associated with and I thought was pretty funny at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And now in retrospect, I see why. So I had these boots made up that were electric and they had buttons underneath the heel here that I would click on and they said rock and roll and they'd light up. So the drum beat, the downbeat would start boop boop bap boop boop bap boop boop bap boop and I'd click on, in pitch black, I'd click on the boots and the boots would light up and it was just an incredible effect and then rockets would go off behind me.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
Right.
You know, it was an amazing thing, you know, to pull it off.
I could dig that.
Yeah, it was very cool. And it worked. I mean, we did it probably 20, 25 times and, you know, and it was a great stunt. So I put the boots away and I hadn't seen them for, I don't know, 15 years, close to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled them out for this. They told me they were looking for something that was really, you know, trying to take the culture and the style of the 70s and crank it to 10.
Mm-hmm.
So I came across those boots and they just screamed me.
Yeah,
and they screamed the character I was playing in the movie. And I thought it was great. They became the star of the film.
Those are the greatest. Yeah. You know, we'll be right back with David Cassidy right after this.
Hey, this is Mark Goodman, inviting you to join me Sundays for K-Rock Dollar You Call It Flashback Night at the Red Onion in West Covina. This Sunday night, I'll host our Flashback Dance Contest featuring the music of electro-recording artists The Heartthrobs and The Cure. Grand prize, a compact disc player, and tickets to The Heartthrobs sold-out Monday night concert at the Roxy in Hollywood. Runner-up prizes include an Elektra Records CD collection, courtesy of Elektra Records. Plus, starting at 5 p.m., the Red Onion is your time machine with the music that made K-Rock famous. From bands like Depeche Mode and Soft Cell. Enjoy the Red Onion's new Flashback Feast, a tempting all-you-can-eat dinner buffet that includes five You Call It drinks, all for the unbelievable price of just $5. And starting at 9, flashback to when drinks were just a dollar. It's Dollar You Call It Drink Night. You call it, the Red Onion bartenders will pour it for just $1 all night long. Sundays, it's the K-Rock Dollar You Call It Flashback Night with me, Mark Goodman, at the West Covina Red Onion, 1360 West Garvey Avenue, off the 10 Freeway at the West Covina Fashion Plaza. Call 960-5075 for the Red Onion.
There I was, romanced by the City of Lights. Shadows from the Eiffel Tower fell as I watched the passers-by and sipped my Café Français.
Introducing the European Tin Collection from General Foods International Coffees. For a limited time, you'll discover four great cities right in your grocery store coffee aisle. So take a trip to your store today and get your specially designed European Tin Collection. Then go sightseeing at home.
I heard light footsteps and reluctantly lowered my cup.
Mom, I'm home!
Okay, listening to Rodney on the Rock, and the in-studio guest is David Cassidy, and a little bit later, Primal Scream will be here. Are you ready for Primal Scream, David?
I've been doing a lot of that lately, actually. I'm out on the road promoting this album.
I hear you're going to be at Tower Records coming up.
Right? I am. I'm going to do something that I'm really slightly afraid of, which is to do an in-store. I just did, for the first time in my whole career, first one in New York about 3 weeks ago, and it was amazing. You know,
how many people showed up and went in New York?
Like 1,500, 2,000
really?
People. Yeah, it was Wow. The biggest one they had done there, and it was amazing for me.
They could do it again coming up on November
the
9th.
People do come. The unfortunate part, honestly, about
did they buy records? Those people that showed up.
Yeah, they did. They bought the album and the single, but the single's getting a lot of airplay in New York, and unlike the radio stations here in Los Angeles, program directors in Los Angeles. Like this one, I would suppose they would say, well, it's really not quite our format.
Mm-hmm.
Catalyst says it's not really quite our format. Pirate Radio says it's not really quite our format. Kiss says, well, it's really not urban enough for us. We're doing an urban thing. So, I'm about to have a top 20 record in America, mm-hmm. and I'm getting it played on an adult contemporary station.
I do hear restaurants. I hear it along with Wilson Phillips in the International House of Pancakes. They play it over the
Jeez, I'm really thrilled to hear that. IHOPs are playing it all over the place.
Yeah.
I'd like to get radio stations in L.A. to play. Anyway, here's the single.
No, it is on the radio. It's on the easy listening station.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it's...
Well, those people grew up.
It's a little too tough for that station, so they had to do their own mix for it.
People that grew up. They grew up with it.
I'd just like to get a radio station in L.A. to play it, who had the courage. Anyway, it is a big hit in America, and I'm thrilled about the album is out. And I am going to be at Tower Records on Sunset on Friday for the first time in my whole life and career. God, I hope somebody shows up. I'll be there at 3 o'clock, and I'll be there for 3 hours. So I'm excited about doing it, honestly. I hope people do come, and it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, let's hear that single.
Yeah, the single's called Line to Myself.
Station, Line to Myself. This is the big single from David Cassie on his new album called David Cassie, Enigma Records.
Touch again, I've been
Okay, teeners, this is David Cassidy, and you're listening to Rodney on the Rock on the world-famous KROQ-FM, Pasadena, Los Angeles.
I was hopeless, heartless, and helpless too. I was singing and skidding on my knees. I was left out in the cold. I had nobody. Oh, homie, people, won't you tell me what was I supposed to do? Yeah. I've been a fool to sit home wasting all of these nights. I sat alone, my heart was shaking. I drove like a dope with the blues. I couldn't see no hope inside. Yeah, I'm patching up my jeans and find some cool to take a ride. Into my old Chevy and we're cruising by the driving. I got me a little money, gonna find myself a honey
on a tour of the bubblegum factory. such a lady. Oh, the best time with me, and be my baby.
That's the Simpletones right there, the Simpletones from the early L.A. punk bands from the Beach Boulevard album doing Tiger Beat Twist.
Tiger Beat Twist, boy, one of my favorites of theirs.
Right, how many times have you done the Tiger Beat Twist, David?
Oh, boy.
You must have been on every cover in the 70s, right?
Yeah, quite a few of them, I guess.
Anyway, we're here with David Cassidy, and right before Tiger Beat Twist, we heard Red Cross did Bubblegum Factory.
Mm-hmm.
And then we heard This Could Be the Night.
This Could Be the Night, which was on High of the Climb album, right.
And then we heard Lying to Myself, the big, big single.
Mm-hmm.
And you wrote it along with...
Sue Schifrin. That's right. She co-wrote most of the songs on the album with me. Mm-hmm. I think 8 of the 10. And she's here in the studio with us. We could give a big KROQ welcome.
All right. Hey, Dave, I wanted to ask you, who played guitar on that Line of Myself? That was some mean guitar.
Yeah, Ron that? Comey did the solo. Yeah, he's great. Mm-hmm. In fact, he played most of the guitars on Line of Myself. He came in and I think when we cut originally, it was he and we cut live drums, bass, guitar, and vocals.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all the stuff, which is rather unusual today because most people don't cut live, but coming from that, I really wanted to try and, for me, a lot of the records that I hear today technically sound great, but they sound very linear.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to get as much of a live feel, even though we used a sync tone and even though we used a click.
Mm-hmm.
And to try and keep the tempos consistent, there still is the sense that we're all playing together as a band, and that's really important. So, yeah, Ron and I were there, and I think Danny Fonghiser, and I can't remember who played bass on the track.
Mm, it's really good.
Yeah, thanks.
I have to say, it's amazing.
Thanks.
I wanted to ask you, we all know what happened to Susan Day. She's doing really big.
Uh-huh.
And you're happening with your new album,
right?
And Danny Bonaducci's doing, I guess, radio. And he's been in a little trouble, and now he's out of trouble, and he's on the
he's
radio.
He's just trouble, though.
Right.
Let's be honest.
What about the other two? The other two younger members of the Partridge Family.
Right.
What happened to them?
I don't know. Honestly,
what?
I haven't seen them now in years, and I've heard that Suzanne Crow is living down south, somewhere near San Diego.
Uh-huh.
I understand she's married and has a child, I think. It's been so long since I've seen her or heard from her, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
And in fact...
Plus the kid, he'd still be young now, the youngest kid would still be young now, wouldn't he? He'd be like,
yeah.
25 maybe?
Yeah, I guess. I can't... I really don't... Brian Forster, I'm not sure. I don't know what he's doing now. I have heard little bits and pieces. I, of course, in my quest to find the bus, have had people come up to me and tell me that they've spotted it. There are sightings all over America now.
Yeah, there are spottings in town, the bus. What I heard at the Partridge Family bus, apparently, is around USC. It's around Flower Street behind a gas station.
I heard that too, but it's...
Sixth and Flower?
Apparently it's gone from there. It's not there anymore. Sixth and Flower. And I heard it was also behind Lucy's. And anybody has any information, just the location as recently as a week or two ago. I don't know if it is behind Lucy's on Melrose, but...
If anybody can come up with the bus, we're going to give them a David Cassidy CD.
I'm going to try and find the bus so I can... Somebody said they saw it outside on a route. I've forgotten which route. In Owensboro, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. It's on somebody's farm out there. Now, there was the bus that we drove that was on television that we saw, and then there was another one that they painted up that was similar to it. That they took around and did promotions with around the country, that Screen Gems Columbia Television took around, and because it was so, I guess, identifiable, and it was so big, the bus was a symbol, you know. Anyway, I'd like to have it because I want to restore it, and I want to give it to the Smithsonian.
Is there ever going to be a reunion of the Partridge Family for a movie? But when I say reunion, I mean every single member. Not one of these Brady Bunch things where they have people pretending to be Marsha Brady.
Actual
members.
I think the closest reunion that we'll ever get to see is probably what Susan Day and I did on the MTV Awards about three or four weeks ago. That's as close as we'll ever get to it.
Well, she's a serious actress now.
Yeah. Well, God forbid.
I know her husband, Bernie.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So
do I. Actually, he came along with Susan, it was a great night for, I think, both of us. We got to sort of to rekindle a little bit and relive it. And even though we were playing David and Susan, we kind of got to play the characters and polarize, which is what we did on the show, each other, and sort of send the people, the characters that we played up a little bit. And she was so convincing. A lot of people said, wow, man, came up to me afterwards and said, was she okay? She looked like she really wasn't digging you doing that. She's that good of an actress, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was great fun to do that. And
never be a Partridge Family movie.
No. I think once you start to mess with it, it's once you finish it, so a show that has that kind of impact, it's perfect, finished, and you leave it alone. You can't go and it's another time. The only reason that people would want to put it together now and do it and put it on television would be for one reason only, which would be money. Mm-hmm. And honestly...
Because they never get all the real people. I mean, you saw the Brady Bunch when it came out.
I saw about 5 minutes of one of their episodes.
The subjects were all too serious, and it wasn't fun.
Yeah. I don't think you can go back and redo it is the problem. And I think for people, the times are different.
You look exactly the same.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Rodney. But honestly, I don't think that the world is the same. And time that it was done, it came out of an innocence which is no longer there. The fabric of America is just totally different. And I think the consciousness is totally different. Mm-hmm. So to try and do it, it would only be done for that reason, and I don't want to mess with it. It is perfect as it is, and to screw around with it now, I don't feel like it's worth bastardizing all of those shows, and for the people that loved it for what it was, and it had so much impact.
And what if something like Saturday Night Live came up and approached you guys to maybe do a skit with did you guys do that?
They've talked a little bit about that. I would definitely do it. Would be the way I would like to play it.
Yeah.
I would love to go in, really send that character up and irreverently play him. That would be fun for me, but really and truly there's nothing in playing Keith that I haven't explored already.
Anyway, let's hear a Partridge Family song, one of your favorite groups here. Woke up this morning.
Back when we were in those crushed maroon velvet outfits.
And those collars.
And those collars. And boy, those ballooned sleeves.
Man, I miss those outfits.
Last night, I turned off the lights, slowed down and thought about you. I thought about the way that it could be. 2 o'clock, wondering what I'm doing here alone without you. So I close my eyes and dream you're here to me. But you just listen. There's something that I've got to let you know. This is you, this pillow that I'm hugging and I'm kissing. And one more thing before I let you go.
And I woke up in love this morning. I woke up in love this morning. Went to sleep with you on my mind.
Danny Bonaducci is talking about what it's like on both sides of stardom. He recently spent some time in county jail after being convicted for possession of cocaine.
When I started to grow up, when I didn't have the kids fade in the street and asking for my autograph, and I really had to get by on my own abilities, that was tough.
one may be a cue, but ain't no substitute. It's the only thing that matters. Don't ask my girlfriend because she does not agree. Yeah, I stay up watching 70s TV. This blind voice to capture crooks. Well, I believe there's things that you won't never learn in books. Go get Archie Bunker and we'll watch Emergency. Yeah, I get off watching 70s TV.
Standby.
I just see his face, I can't forget the time or place where we didn't mention his girl for me. I want all the world to see we've met. Na 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 na. Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way, and I'd have never been aware. But as it is, I'll dream of her tonight. Na 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 na. Falling, yes I am falling. Then she keeps calling me back again. I'd never know.
Man, if you got time, God, keep that time.
Out of sight, cause other girls were never quite like this. Na 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 na. Falling, yes I am falling. And she keeps calling me back again. I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She is a girl for me. I want all the world to see we met. Na 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 na. Falling, yes I am falling. And she's calling me back again.
Bonaducci, he's really missed his calling, hasn't he? Scary.
There he is, Danny Bonaducci with the Tater Tots on Carol Q.
What time?
Good old Danny. He's
Russian in a Dragon.
Is Danny playing your record? We played his record.
Danny's on an urban station in Phoenix, Arizona, and unfortunately, they don't play my record on urban stations. It's a dance, all dance, 24 hours a day.
Oh. You know, I hate that kind of music.
Well, to each his own, you know? I got nothing to say about it. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't.
We heard Danny Bonaducci, and then we heard Dramarama. They did 70s TV. Lori Partridge mentioned in the song there. Mm-hmm. And then we heard Mr. Eep and the Calculations. Did Danny Bonaducci got busted the other day?
Danny Partridge got busted.
Yeah.
That's what it was called. I love that. Yeah.
Mr. Eep and the Calculations. And then we heard, woke up this morning from the Partridge Family,
uh-huh.
David singing.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was a very good song.
It was a big hit, yeah. Uh-huh.
Did you ever perform that live?
Well, you know, back in the early days I did it, and, you know, for probably a year or two after it was a hit, I went out and did it, and it was one of the real up-tempo things, so I always try to keep it in the set. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things that when I'm going to go back out on tour, and I haven't played those songs for many, many years, mm-hmm. 15 to be precise, and I'm going to do that one, and on that CD there are a number of songs that were not singles that were really good tunes that I liked, and I remember recording them, and I'm going to go and do some of the things that we played a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of the old Partridge things. Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing a lot of that early stuff. It's been so long since I played it. It's not like I got sick of playing it and I'm tired of playing it. I'm really looking forward to going out and doing that and obviously doing all the new stuff as well.
David Cassidy concert soon in L.A., do you think?
Well, I hope so. What I want to do is, you know, the album is just out 3 weeks now and it's just taken hold. So when people become familiar with it, you don't want to go out and do things that people are unfamiliar with, and if all of your new stuff is unfamiliar, you're in trouble because then they only want to hear old stuff.
And then, of course, the next David Cassidy appearance is at Tower Records.
Oh yeah, on Friday.
That's
true. At 3:00, 3 to 6, I'm going to be there.
Yeah, I wonder. A friend of mine in Dramarama, Chris Carter, he wanted to know about. He did an album once with Mick Ronson.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that album?
Well, actually, we did some recording together.
He used to be with David Bowie.
After he split up with David, he and I at one point talked about doing a band together, and we got together and played, and he played on a thing called Getting It in the Street, and it was a song that I had written at the time, and
was that released?
Mick came up. Yeah, it was the last. It was actually for contractual reasons. They put a few different things, some older things and some newer things together that I had recorded to get out of my contract with RCA. I had decided I was not going out on the road anymore and promoting it. And in fact, the first two albums had done quite well, and we just decided to part ways. The whole regime had come in, and a whole new regime that was there. And it was 1978. It was my last album, so it was an album that was released. It was not very successful. I did nothing to promote it, and in fact, I was kind of glad that it came and went. There's some kind of interesting things.
It's a collector's item, right?
I guess it is, yeah.
Do you own a couple of those?
I haven't got one. I haven't got one. I asked somebody about it.
Well, here's a question on that. How many lunch pails do you have?
I have, I found a box of them. I have about six of them. Yeah, I found a box that was given to me. They never sent me the merchandise in the.
Where would you trade for one?
Early days. Well, I'm going to actually get them signed by everybody and give them to charities. And
that's a good idea.
I think it's the best thing to do with them, you know? Wait, I guess, until there becomes a real interest. They just sold one, apparently, in England a few months ago for 1,500 or 1,000 pounds.
Really?
$1,500.
That's a lot of money.
That is pristine. So I've got six of those, I think, or five of those.
Imagine those autographed.
Yeah, I want to do that. I'm going to have to, of course, round up. Well, Danny's out of prison now, so I won't have a problem with him. Let's see. I'm going to have to find Jeremy Gelbwax.
Mm-hmm. Gotta wonder where Jeremy Gilblex is now.
Mr. Kincaid.
Yeah. Oh no, Ruben. No, Dave Madden's. He's around. He's great. In fact, I see Dave every now and again, and he was kind enough to come in and do a spot for my video before it went to MTV. He came in and did a special spot for us. And when I came back and made this album that's just been released, we wanted to address the past. And for the trades, what we did is I got Dave Madden to come in and my current manager, Joe Regis, and for the trade shots, you know, of me signing, here's Enigma Boss, Bill Hine. In the photograph is Cassidy's former manager, Ruben Kincaid, and permanent current manager, Joe Regis. Mm. So it was great just to address it and deal with it, and so people know that I had a sense of humor about the past, as with my career, you have to have a sense of humor.
Well, here's something I want to ask about the past.
Yeah.
In your later episodes, you had a next-door neighbor, a kid, that came in and he sang.
Ah, yeah.
Who was he and what did he do?
Well, the reason they tried doing that, in the last season, I was leaving. I had my contract renegotiated, and I was on my way out. And the network and Columbia at the time felt that the show couldn't go on unless they had someone to replace me. I disagreed, so they tried interjecting all of these new characters, and what they did was they changed the night. They moved the Partridge Family from where it had been top 10 for 3.5 years to opposite the number one rated show in the country, All in the Family. They moved it to Saturday night. So we ended up dying a death the last half a year. And the character you were speaking of was Ricky Siegel.